Coming up on New York Now, gubernatorial candidate Stephanie Miner joins us in studio.
Well, look, we've seen that the leadership in Albany is corrupt, it's wasteful, and it's not solving problems. And there's no room for me in Andrew Cuomo's Democratic Party.
And Republican statewide candidates Keith Woodford and Mark Molinaro come to Albany.
He wants the viciousness at the national level because it exposes the ugliness of politics, and he gets to use it for his benefit. I'm not allowed to say this, but I'll say it anyway. I'm told not to. He's lying. He's lying.
It's next on New York Now, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program. This is New York Now.
Hi, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan.
And I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union. A judge hopes that the Prococo verdict sends a strong message to Albany. We know how that usually works out.
Casey and I will be discussing the sentencing of Joe Prococo that came down Thursday, the former top aide to Andrew Cuomo, receiving 6 years in jail. First, though, primary day was all about the Democrats. This week, the Republicans took center stage in the Capital Region. GOP nominee for governor Mark Molinaro brought what he calls the Cuomo Corruption Tour to the state capitol Tuesday. There he called for the dismissal of Larry Schwartz from the MTA board. He was appointed by the governor to this position in 2015. Schwartz is a close ally and former secretary to Andrew Cuomo. It was revealed over the weekend that he signed off on the controversial mailer that went out just days before the primary, implying Democrat Cynthia Nixon was soft on anti-Semitism. Schwartz currently is the chief strategy officer at OTG, a private company that is receiving state funds as part of the ongoing upgrades happening at LaGuardia Airport.
Further, we're submitting FOIL requests, and I'd encourage you all to do the same, although I suspect the governor is not going to be forthright in that as well. We are FOILing the governor's office, the Port Authority, the Tax Department, the Division of the Budget, the New York State Thruway Authority, the Gaming Commission, the MTA, and the Power Authority to prove that Larry Schwartz has been allowed to have total access within state government and is functioning as an unregistered lobbyist.
Molinaro also expressed his frustration at the Cuomo campaign's nickname for him.
But he's tying you to him. He and his campaign staff call it, a Trump mini-me.
And you should stop reporting it. I mean, listen, I don't mean to say this rudely, but first of all, admittedly, I'm not all that short. But it's beneath us. Listen, it is beneath us. It'd be no more than me saying, what, he's a big, tall goon? I don't think that's appropriate either. So at the end of the day, the more we feed this kind of vitriol, the more you're going to get it. And he wants nothing more than he wants the vitriol at the national level. He wants the viciousness at the national level because it exposes the ugliness of politics, and he gets to use it for his benefit. I'm not allowed to say this, but I'll say it anyway. I'm told not to. He's lying. He's lying. He knows full well who I voted for in the presidential election. He knows full well who I am.
Reporter Ken Lovitz of the Daily News, though, pointed out to the Republican that he was engaging in this name-calling as well.
You talked about keeping the tone level high, how he called you a Trump mini-me, and that's, beyond the pale. But even just alone today, you just called him a king, a deranged, acting like a deranged Wizard of Oz, a guy born on third base who thinks he's hit a triple. I mean, how is that different than them attacking you the way they attack?
Because it's accurate. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Also making a stop at the Legislative Office Building press room was Republican nominee for Attorney General Keith Woodford, who detailed some of his plan to tackle corruption if elected.
I just want the people to know that from day one, when I'm elected Attorney General, we're not going to have to wait for the legislature. Contrary to what my opponent says, an effective Attorney General can go after the biggest issue out there, that is public corruption, from day one. You know, we've had billions of dollars of taxpayer funds misspent or wasted because politicians are working for themselves and not working for the people.
Woodford will take on Democrat Tish James in November. Up the road a little bit in suburban Colony, the state Republican Party held a meeting. Erie County Chairman Nick Langworthy was there, and he spoke about the surprising news that indicted Western New York Congressman Chris Collins has decided to stay on the ballot.
As I said, I felt like a jilted groom at the altar. Listen, we had been preparing for a substitution. There was obviously no secret about that. I had done many interviews and talked to many of your stations about the substitution and us moving forward. We had interviewed candidates. We had a cavalcade of excellent potential candidates for Congress that we would have been proud to have. That was for naught. We, you know, find ourselves back where we were on August 8th. Congressman Collins will continue on the ballot, and we will, you know, it's very important that the seat stay in Republican hands.
Chairman Ed Cox was there, of course, and said despite the fact that Andrew Cuomo won easily with two-thirds of the votes on primary night, there were positives to be found for his party.
There were big numbers, but the bottom line is that 500,000 Democrats, after 25 million being dumped on them about Andrew Cuomo, voted against him. That's a huge number. And you go down ballot from that, he had a very hard time because a lot of people voted for him because of the corruption or corruption that's around him. A lot of Democrats, I'm sure, held their nose to vote for him to give him his 66%.
All right, Casey, the big story came down Thursday afternoon. Joe Prococo, former longtime aide to Andrew Cuomo, sentenced to 6 years in prison.
Yeah, this was the terminal point, or one of them, for a story that we've been covering for 2.5 years now, ever since we learned of the investigation into what became known as the upstate development scandal brought by the Manhattan U.S. Attorney's Office. 6 years in Otisville, it looks like, for Joe Prococo, as well as 3 years of supervised release. He stands to lose at least $225,000 in forfeiture. Federal prosecutors are asking for the full $320,000 in illicit payments that he, or, you know, his funneled through his wife, took from two companies, Competitive Power Ventures, which is building a power plant in Orange County, and Core Development out in Syracuse. Judge Valerie Caproni, U.S. District Judge, had harsh words for Prococo at the sentencing. After his lawyer spoke, after the prosecutor spoke, she called Prococo a bully, said that his crimes were stemmed from arrogance and greed, and she also made a point and hoped that the sentence would send a message to Albany, which of course has been extremely resistant to such messages. Here's just a quote. She said, "At this moment, public faith in government is at an all-time low. There's so much money sloshing around in politics that even the most Pollyanna-ish of citizens has to wonder whether any public decision is being made on the merits."
Yeah, she was harsh. Not only that, she questioned his sorrow and his apology in court.
Yeah, Prococo wrote a letter to the court just last week saying, "I'm filled with regret and remorse. I'm so sorry for the shame I've brought to my family, the shame I've brought to my former colleagues in state government." And Prococo's attorney, Barry Borer, got up before Prococo did to address the court. And Caproni said he has said that he is filled with regret and remorse. What for? Because he was...
Because he got caught?
He did. He did not exactly inventory the things that he felt regret or remorse for. And she said exactly that. She said, "Is he regretful because he got caught?" Borer, of course, said, "Well, you know, we're still leaving open the possibility of filing an appeal, so he's not gonna get very detailed about what he feels sorry about." But it was a remarkable courtroom appearance.
Here's the question that you've asked and I've asked many times: so what does this mean now? We saw what happened to former Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver, former Senate Majority Leader Dean Skelos. Nothing really happened legislatively. What do we think, if anything, will happen now?
Well, I mean, we've heard the great quote from Blair Horner, which I think was 2 years ago when the Skelos and Silver trials had just concluded in their first set of guilty verdicts. Now we've had two more guilty verdicts after a U.S. Supreme Court decision overturned the initial convictions. They've now been reconvicted. They're heading off to sentencing themselves. Blair Horner said 2 years ago, Albany is now living through its Watergate moment. What do we hear? Crickets. Yeah. The state government, state institutions are incredibly resistant to fundamental ethical change. We have seen that lesson over and over again. This has now been 5 years since, I think it's fair to say, that 2013 was really when the tidal wave of these convictions began. We're going to hear a lot on the stump from Mark Molinaro, the Republican candidate, and others about corruption in Albany, but whether or not it's going to result in any legislative change remains to be seen.
Your colleague at the Times Union, Chris Bragg, wrote an article on Thursday that mentioned that in court they were talking about how the fact that Joe Prococo was allegedly, you know, using the phone in the campaign, using the government phone while he was working for the campaign in 2014, as Chris pointed out in his article, Jacobe apparently hasn't even investigated that.
Not only that, but Jacobe made the point in a lawsuit which was brought by State Republican Chair Ed Cox and the aforementioned Mark Molinaro. Mm-hmm. Cox and Molinaro filed a complaint on just this issue that came up at the trial, that Prococo in 2014, when he was not working for the executive chamber, was working out of his old executive chamber office. Mm-hmm. He was using that phone, apparently, for abundant campaign business. That, of course, is a violation of public officers' law if, in fact, it's confirmed, it's proven. Jacobe apparently has not even launched an investigation into this. Of course, Jacobe is a black box. We don't know, what it's working on at any given time because of its confidentiality rules. But what we do know is it is supposed to send out letters to the potential targets of its investigations. Both the Cuomo campaign and the executive chamber have both said we haven't received one of those letters,
to respond.
Which seems to indicate that Jacobe has not even taken a vote on this. Mm. Jacobe is saying, the Molinaro and Cox complaint, it's filled with secondhand information such as investigative news reports, which is true enough, but those investigative reports are based on evidence that was presented at a federal trial that includes interrogation and data that was collected by the FBI. If that's not enough for Jacobe to investigate, I don't know what is.
Well, we did have one more guest this week in our studio, someone who had a little something to say about this as well.
Indeed, yeah. Our Karen DeWitt sat down this week with former Syracuse mayor and former co-chair of the State Democratic Committee, Stephanie Miner, who became so disenchanted with the governor, she decided to challenge him as a third-party candidate.
Now, you're a lifelong Democrat. Why are you running as an independent against Governor Andrew Cuomo?
Well, look, we've seen that the leadership in Albany is corrupt, it's wasteful, and it's not solving problems. And there's no room for me in Andrew Cuomo's Democratic Party, as evidenced by the fact that you had a Democratic Party that allowed an anti-Semitic mailer to go through, and virtually the entire leadership just kind of turned their nose and said, it wasn't me. That's the kind of obnoxious, totally unacceptable political campaigning that people of goodwill need to stand up and say no, whether it's a Democrat, a Republican, or an independent.
You did have a good relationship with the Cuomo family at one point. Didn't you start your career working for Mario Cuomo, right?
I did. But, this is not about personal relationships. This is about whether we're solving problems for the people of New York. And being the mayor of the fifth largest city in New York State, I saw poverty. I saw people fleeing. Economic development that had become picking winners and losers, and corruption just through and through the entire system. And for me, I'm a romantic about government and wanting to solve problems and helping people. And both parties, both Democrats and Republicans, and the entire Albany establishment was much more interested in getting reelected and, getting campaign contributions than they were in solving problems. So I've said, look, I'm going to do this from the outside.
Now, in the recently concluded Democratic primary, Cynthia Nixon emphasized a lot of the issues you're talking about corruption within the Cuomo administration. And it didn't seem like it resonated with voters. She lost 2-1. So how do you think that you could get that message out more effectively than she did?
She did a great job, but we have different experience levels. I was the mayor of the fifth largest city in New York. I've actually governed. I've had to make tough choices. I've had to be an advocate for the people of my city, not just an advocate for people who give me campaign contributions. And when you have elections, they're not normally, they're multifaceted, so there are a lot of different issues at play. Corruption is clearly debasing our entire political system, and it's making it so that 1 million New Yorkers have left this state in the past 8 years, more than any other state, because of a lack of opportunity upstate, a lack of affordability downstate, and we need to change the system.
Now, when you were more friendly with Andrew Cuomo, you were co-chair of the State Democratic party. You mentioned the anti-Semitic mailer that went out against Ms. Nixon, put out by the Democratic State Committee. Based on your experience when you were there at the State Committee, what do you think of the explanations that we've heard that keep changing of, you know, they either saw it or Larry Schwartz, the former advisor, looked at one side of the mailer but didn't look at the negative side of the mailer? I mean, is it realistic that something like this could be done so sloppily and go out without the top people knowing about it?
No. And if that did happen, then somebody would have been fired very publicly. So this was a decision that the inner circle made and hoped that they wouldn't get caught. And once they did get caught, you know, there's different explanations, or then they just stopped talking about it. And that's what I mean. If Donald Trump had done something like this, Democrats would be protesting. We can't just say just because Andrew Cuomo is a Democrat that therefore that tactic is acceptable. Normalizing ethnic stereotyping or hateful campaign tactics is completely undercuts people's faith in our democracy. And that means Democrats and Republicans and independents, if we want people to be a part of this process, then we have to be respectful and civil and understand that those kind of tactics must be called out immediately.
Isn't the Democratic Party supposed to be neutral in primaries?
Absolutely they are.
And that didn't really happen here.
Well, once again, that's why I say it's Andrew Cuomo's Democratic Party. And so they are, supposed to be neutral, but they clearly are not neutral.
Governor Cuomo has spent a lot of time railing against President Donald Trump and his policies, criticizing Donald Trump. He did that through the primary. He's done that in rallies in the general election. He says that New York should be the resistance, the center of the resistance to Donald Trump. What do you think of the governor doing that, and should New York be the resistance?
Look, I think the resistance should be solving people's problems. If you want to have a real alternative, if you want to say no to Trump, then solve people's problems through government. But what the Andrew Cuomo has done is spent $25 million and used all the apparatus of the state to make this Andrew Cuomo versus Donald Trump. I think New Yorkers want to say no to Donald Trump. I think they want to say no to Andrew Cuomo. They want to say yes to stop the corruption, yes to ethical governance, yes to solving our problems, yes to figuring out how we can minimize our tax burden and have services that will help all of us raise our families.
But I would assume that there'd be Trump's policies that you would disagree with. And if you were governor, you would fight against.
Well,
so
absolutely.
Is that wrong to do that?
No, but I think you fight against policies by talking substance and facts and why they're wrong, not just standing up and bellowing against them. You know, so we should talk about how an immigration policy helps New York farmers upstate and also helps small businesses downstate, not just standing up and yelling about it. We should talk about how the lack of President Trump's health care policies is hurting real New Yorkers. We should talk about the lack of an infrastructure bill. There are 1,700 bridges in New York State that are structurally deficient. How President Trump and the Republicans, their policies are undercutting New Yorkers. And don't make it so it's just personal, because if you just, you know, the pendulum just swings from one end to the other, again, people's problems aren't being solved, and that's what we need. And that's what the people expect of us.
Do you think the governor's talking enough about what he's going to do for a third term?
No, I don't think he's talking at all about what he's going to do for a third term. And again, I think that does a huge disservice to the people of the state. We have the highest taxes in the country, and yet our infrastructure and our services, educational system, healthcare are crumbling around us. How are we going to solve those issues? How are we going to keep our water clean? How are we going to make sure people have good healthcare, that their children are educated, that our roads are safe, our bridges are safe? There's been no discussion about any of that.
You have a Republican running mate. It's Michael Volpe, your lieutenant governor candidate, who's the mayor of Pelham in Westchester County. I'm wondering, is that going to be a difficulty going forward, since there's so many Democrats in New York?
I don't think so. First and foremost, I chose him. He's a mayor. Mayors understand we're problem solvers. It's not a glamorous job, but you do it because you want to solve problems and help people. And he has that experience. And he also has the experience where I do. When you solve problems, you don't turn and say, are you a Republican? Are you a Democrat? Are you an independent or a Green Party member? You say, how can we get together and find out where we can come to consensus and we can move our city, our communities forward? We need more of that in New York. Less polarization, more community interest, more figuring out what is it that we can do together to move our state forward.
And speaking of parties, Green Party candidate Howie Hawkins was at the Capitol this week, and he had some things to say about the general election that's now ongoing. Let's take a look at that, and then I want to get your reaction.
My name's Howie Hawkins. I'm the Green Party candidate for governor of New York. And you're looking at Plan B for all those Cynthia Nixon, Jemima Williams, and Zephyr Teachout voters who are looking for a progressive alternative. In fact, I would say, looking at the polls, most liberals are still voting for Cuomo. I'm their alternative, too, if they really want a progressive option.
So what do you think of what his comments?
You know, I've known Howie for a long time. He actually lives in Syracuse. And I congratulate him for he's always been very active in talking about issues. But there are real governing challenges where I think experience and being able to sort through these issues are important. And the Green Party is, you know, doesn't really understand or want to talk about the issues and nuancing of property taxes, for example. Or how do you solve an education challenge? How do you bring people health care? If it's just a matter of being a conscientious objector, but I think elections are too important and that voters want experience, they want real ideas, and that we can't govern just from an ideology. You have to govern from a practicality.
Well, do you consider yourself a progressive, or do you seem like you have kind of more nuanced position than that?
Look, I consider myself somebody who had to solve problems and had to move a city forward, and I'm not an ideologue. You don't solve problems from an ideology. It's where you can start, but you also have to figure out how can we get to a place where we can move off the dime. As a mayor, you don't have the luxury of engaging in a 30-second soundbite and, you know, casting aspersion on the other person and then just walking away. You got to solve the problem. You got to be able to pay the firefighters and the snowplow drivers and make sure that bad guys and bad people get arrested, children get educated. And when you have that responsibility and you've done it, what you realize is that you've got to bring everybody around a table, you've got to be civil, and you have to understand that to listen and also react to try to solve problems.
Well, I want to ask you about some of the issues that have come up in the governor's race. That is when there's been discussion of issues, because there hasn't been a lot. So if we could just go
sure.
through them briefly. One of them, single-payer health care for New York. Are you for that or against
Look,
that?
I'm for single-payer at a federal level, but I am deeply suspicious that New York State would be able to pay for it on its own. And I think the implications of doing that and not thinking through what the consequences would be, I find very, very troubling. And just the rush to, again, a 30-second soundbite, I'm for single-payer, but not talk about the impact it would have. How are we going to pay for it? We already are the highest tax state in the country.
Well, one of the ways is raising taxes further on the wealthy to pay for that, and, you know, maybe for education. What do you think about that?
Look, 40% of our revenues in the state come from millionaires and over. And because of the Trump tax law, these people now have the ability to be very mobile and leave the state, move to Florida and pay, you know, live there for 6 months plus a day. We have to understand that this is not a bottomless pit of money that we have, and also understand that there are people who are really struggling to pay the taxes now and don't have faith that government can solve problems. So how can we raise them taxes on them more when we haven't even begun to solve the problems that are at their very feet right now?
Okay, $15 minimum wage. I think I heard you say that it may not be appropriate for every part of the state.
It may not. Now, I supported and raised the minimum wage for the city of Syracuse workers to $15 when I was mayor, and I did that after looking at our budget, after consulting with our budget director and talking to people and ensuring that we could afford it before I announced it. And then we announced it and did that. But you have to have the same kind of process and scrutiny for it.
And finally, legalizing marijuana. Where do you stand on that?
I'm for legalizing marijuana. I don't think that it should be criminalized. And I think when you deal with substance abuse issues, they're mental health issues, not criminal justice issues.
All right, we'll have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us,
Thank
Stephanie
you.
Minor.
It's been a pleasure.
And now back to Matt and Casey at the desk.
All right, this week's New York Now poll question is asking, as of now, which candidate would you most likely vote for governor? We have five choices up. Let us know by logging on to our website, nynow.org. Last week, our post-primary poll question asked you what the biggest storyline from that night was, and the overwhelming majority said the former members of the Independent Democratic Conference taking it on the chin, 6 of 8 losing. Christine in Petersburg was in the majority and said, "It was a shock, but finally a shock for good."
Jacob in New York City watching on WNET told us IDC going down was going to happen. Jeff Klein was a surprise. Beware fake Democrats. And finally, Sandy in Rochester watching on WXXI voted for the winner of the Democratic AG primary, saying that Tish James's victory is a sign that it's no longer going to be business as usual. I look forward to watching her go after Trump. I have a feeling he won't know what hit him.
As always, you can vote this week at nynow.org. It's where you can watch any of our past programs and where you can find us on social media.
There you'll find a link to my paper's Capital Confidential blog, also available at timesunion.com.
All right, Casey, Stephanie Miner going as a third-party candidate. Always a very difficult thing to do, especially when you're running for governor.
Yeah, and I think the real goal here is to get 50,000 votes on the gubernatorial ballot, which would allow the Serve America movement, which, by the way, shares the same initials Stephanie A. Miner, stay on the ballot, get a ballot position for the next 4 years. That's very important for a new party, a new political effort like this, because it helps them on, you know, lower ticket races, midterms, sure, local candidates, that type of thing. But a Quinnipiac poll that was taken in July, which of course was a couple of weeks ago, found in a hypothetical six-way race, Libertarian Larry Sharp, Green Party candidate Howie Hawkins, and Stephanie Miner added together only toted up to about 5%.
A lot of work to do in September and October.
Indeed. All right. Well, that is all the time we have this week. Thanks for watching. I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union.
I'm Matt Ryan. We'll see you next time right here on your local PBS station.